topic, just hit that push to talk and tell me what it is.
WB2BX, Elroy.
Hello, Frank. How are you tonight?
Doing good. Thanks, Roy. Glad I remembered to get on here. I just wanted to be talking earlier about the NVIDIA chips and how they're probably going to be obsolete within, say, 2 years or so. I was wondering if the situation is somewhat analogous to the situation with the early CPU chips in the early 1980s, the 4040, 8080, 8800, and I forget what a bunch of other popular ones were, which I think became obsolete fairly quickly as speeds and memory size increased at a rate that was predicted, I believe, by something called Moore's Law. So I was wondering if this is a similar situation. I also, now that I think of it, I'm not clear what NVIDIA does. Are they a fabricator like TSI, the firm in Taiwan that's kind of got a good deal from the federal government here by saying, look, Taiwan could be invaded and we could be put out of business, so maybe you'd better let us open a factory on favorable terms in the United States? Or does NVIDIA do something different than what the fabs do? That's a bunch of questions there. I don't know if you have answers. WB2BX, so go ahead.
AC2GS. I got answers. Hopefully they're correct answers. NVIDIA is not a fabricator. They have their fabrication, their chips fabricated by TSMC in Taiwan. They are a design company. They design the chips, and then they send the design parameters over to TSMC where the fabrications are done. And to a degree, it's part of the technological advancement of pseudo Moore's Law. They're packing more chips in smaller area and improving thermal production and dealing with thermal exhaust and such. So every few years, effectively, the NVIDIA chips for training artificial intelligence becomes more sophisticated. They get to operate faster, more operations, and for less power and for less heat dissipation requirements. So the technical level of the chip designs improves every year. You know they're working. They're already finished the design on the next chipset. They're already working on multi-generational improvements down the line. So it's a moving target. They haven't come anywhere close to their technological wall, if you will.
Yeah, so the situation then is somewhat analogous to what happened in the 1980s, where all those chips became obsolete. And as far as I know, the companies that created those, Motorola and some of the others, are still very much in the business. They're just doing different chips. So wouldn't you expect the same thing will happen with NVIDIA?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's not the problem. The problem is not them upscaling over time. That's just what all these companies do to one degree or another, unless something terrible goes bump in the night. There are a lot of chip manufacturers we know and love who are a shadow of their former selves. Texas Instruments made some of the most interesting early integrated circuits, and now it's more of a commodity than it is what they used to do. The problem is not that they simply move on to better chips, but someone owns $1 trillion worth of the old chips. And what do you do with semi-worthless $1 trillion theoretically worth landfill? That's where the problem comes with a bursting of the AI bubble at this point. You can't simply wait 5 years for things to stabilize and then go back to the same server farm using the old chips, because most of your people paying for the service will rather use another company that bought state-of-the-art chips that are better and give them more power for their buck.
Yeah, so did the same thing happen in the 1980s when all those 8080 and 8800 and I forget what some of the other chips were, based computers became obsolete? All those chips, as you said, the companies... all those companies became shadows of their former selves, and all those chips wound up in the landfills. Is that what you're saying is going to happen again?
Well, yeah. I mean, but much worse, because back in those days, people weren't stockpiling these chips. They were buying them and building computers and selling the computers and getting the money out of them. Here, you got a bunch of guys rolling the dice. They're saying that they're going to go from a couple of billion dollars a year profit to $1 trillion in something like 4 or 5 years. Chances are all of them aren't going to do that. Maybe one of them will do that, but I don't even think that. I don't think the present technology and generative transform AI, or whatever you want to call it, is going to scale properly in order to let them get back trillions of dollars. So they're going to be stuck holding a very big, worthless bag. And it's not like if they wait long enough, some company like Google will come up with a breakthrough in AI that's much more sophisticated and actually capable of simulating human thought. And then they'll just take their chips out of the ground, Phil, and use them, and so they'll make a profit. By that time, the chips will be close to worthless for what they want to do. So that's the really big problem. These chips have to kind of be used, today, if not yesterday, in order to kind of pay off all their debt, and it's not going to happen.
Yeah, so what you're saying is the current bubble is going to be even worse than the original internet bubble. I don't remember whether there was there was a recession in the mid-80s, but I don't know how that was more connected to shenanigans on Wall Street than I think the chip market. But I remember the internet bubble burst, which was kind of intertwined with, and then 9/11 shortly after that, but the internet bubble actually burst first. But anyway, I guess this is going to be similar, but much worse because of the amount of speculation going on. Is that your point?
Yeah, that's my assessment. Unfortunately, massive quantities of money, much more than even the dot-com, are tied up in all this. And they're all connected to each other. So if one fails, they pretty much all fail at once. So that's unfortunately, my guess is OpenAI is probably in the most dangerous situation. Sam has extended the debt of his company ridiculously. He's invested in Johnny Ive's company to bring out AI hardware that no one wants and no one will use and probably won't even work. There's something they're working on, which is looks like a very weird long earpiece that's supposed to read your mind and tap into OpenAI to answer your questions that you think about. Lots of luck with that. So You know, I mean, it's just, I just see a lot of flashing red lights. So they're the most financially extended. They're the most feckless and dangerous about their investments. And so I think, all things being equal, they're the most likely first thing to go splat.
Well, as long as a certain politician's family is one of the first to go splat, I'm okay with it. But seriously, yeah, I could see that as a real problem. It's like any other bubble, going back to the tulip bubble of the 17th century. I mean, people think things will go up forever, and markets just don't go up forever. It doesn't work that way. Anyway, back to that WB2BXO. Very interesting.
Okay, very, very good. That's just the nature of human beings. We talked about our flawed nature, that we're in a lot of things for the money and the money alone. That's just part of being human, and there's not much you can do about it. So the same goes for all these bubbles. Also, there's this weird tendency, even when it's not financially advantageous, to assume that trends will continue unchanging. I remember, and I mentioned this example back from the 80s. That was, you know, when there was a big HIV scare. And what some rocket scientist decided to do was he plotted the curve of how many people came down with AIDS over time, and then he extrapolated. So at that point, it had not saturated the high-risk groups of drug users and the male homosexual community. And so he simply took that line and just drew it as a straight line going further and further up. And according to his extrapolations, I think he announced to the world that by the year 2005, everyone would be dead of AIDS, which didn't happen, thankfully. But again, it is an inherent problem human beings have. They have a marked inability to understand that trends will ultimately change. Nothing goes on forever. There is always going to be discontinuities and readjustments that go on. And so that's part of what bubbles are, plus a lot of hype and a lot of people who theoretically should know better giving very bad advice to people who shouldn't listen to them.
Well, yeah, although perhaps crazy predictions like that is that at least a lot of people got off their butts and developed HIV medications that at least if all the advertisements for them are to believe, are incredibly successful and probably incredibly expensive. And then, of course, the same thing happened again with COVID, when everybody were all running around like chickens without heads, saying we're all going to, you know, shut down the whole economy because everybody's going to die of COVID, when a more meaningful response might have been appropriate, but the benefit was it did spur serious action, getting a COVID vaccine within a year or 18 months instead of within 10 years. So I guess maybe there's some kind of societal benefit to that kind of panic, even though it sounds unreasonable, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you could almost always find a silver lining somewhere. Unfortunately, with all the success that science gave the world, there's still a great deal of mistrust. You have basically lunatics in the health department of the in Washington and coming up with the worst kind of advice possible. And they scuttled an RNA virus vaccine recently. So at least for the next few years, science in the United States is taking a catnap.
Oh, Moderna screamed so loudly about that that apparently they reversed themselves. I think the media has been kind of quiet about that because the media didn't want certain people in the federal government to get too angry with them and threaten to take away their toys. But I think the upshot was that the FDA reversed themselves on refusing to move forward with the vaccine, if I remember correctly, a couple of weeks ago. Go ahead.
Okay, I might have missed that. I know they fired a anti-vax guy from the department, but all the others are still there. So I think that was simply done as a demonstration that the public was, especially the medical community, is apoplectic. And, you know, I mean, they regularly at this point issue corrections saying, don't listen to the federal government, do this. They can't even be polite anymore because it's just ridiculous. RFK Jr. would have us having a T-bone steak for breakfast. You know, he flipped the entire food table on its edge. So historians are going to come back and look all this stuff up and be aghast at what we kind of took for granted. It's the insane people have taken charge of the mental facility. So hopefully in a couple of years we'll kind of twirl everything 180 degrees and go back where we were before. But I don't know. It's going to set everything back by years, if not decades, unfortunately.
Hopefully within a year or two, we'll start the cleanup in Isle America, so to speak. And, of course, the cleanup takes a heck of a lot of more time than the disaster. And these fools have created yet another disaster in the last day or so. And we'll see where that leads up. Anyway, the MNRA decision was reversed. And as I said, I think I know it was mentioned in the media, but I suspect the media has been relatively quiet because they didn't want to make his nibs and his buddies too mad. And you might look up, Morgan Freeman made an interesting statement on Lawrence O'Donnell's show, by the way, which I can't repeat on the air. You might want to look that up. I think that's very apropos. Anyway, let me get on with the net. I have to finish what I'm doing and start getting ready to hit the sack. WB2BXL.
Yeah, okay, very good. Thank you as always. I just hope that the Ellisons don't decide that they want to buy Disney. Then they collect all the cards. Anyway, it's 10:20. It's a great time to call this segment done and finished. And I thank you all for participating. And I hope you come back next Sunday when we try and do it all over again. But it's a perfect time for Paul WS2N to present the SpaceNet.
Okay, we're here, WS2N, for the SpaceNet report for the TechNet. And, I understand there was a launch tonight from Florida that could be seen over Long Island. Somebody just sent me a picture. And that went off at, 9:56, so a few minutes ago. Anyway, also there was another launch from, supposed to go up from California during this net. That's been delayed due to upper level winds. That was the Firefly mission. They call it, Alpha. Alpha is the rocket built by Firefly. We'll see if they make it off the ground. I think probably another day or two. Yeah, I wanted to talk about this big change for the human space program that's coming up. Let me just stand by. Anybody wants to say anything first? Come on. Okay, I don't know if John was still out there, but I can't tell. I don't have that hookup that you have to tell who's out there or not, Roy. But anyway, the big change for the net is going to be the space launch system. It's called Artemis 2. It's supposed to get off the ground. Artemis 1 was a couple of years ago. That was very successful. Went around the moon, came back, landed in the Pacific Ocean, 25-day mission. No crew on board. The upcoming mission, Artemis 2, has four people on board, and three of which, by the way, are ham radio operators. And they were scheduled to actually launch February 6th, but that was delayed due to hydrogen leaks, and they worked on that with the seals and all, got that all straightened out. They did another wet dress rehearsal. What that means is they fill up the whole rocket with 700 gallons worth of fuel, cryogenic hydrogen and cryogenic oxygen, and that all went well, and they thought they had a chance of getting off the ground early March. But then they did more testing, and they found out the interim cryogenic propulsion stage, which is the upper stage of the vehicle. They ran some tests on the helium system. Helium is important because, you know, helium, they have these tanks that will release helium to the turbines in the second stage, which spin up the propellant. The propellant gets forced into the combustion chamber, and that's how that works. That's a liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen deal. So they had problems with the helium that does that, and they couldn't fix that on the launch pad, so they bring SLS back to the vehicle assembly building, VAB, to work on that and clear that problem. So chances are they could probably get off the ground in April. That was the latest report. So we'll see. That's a 10-day mission around the moon and then back and get back into the Pacific Ocean for a landing. But they had this conference, and I've seen clips of that. I've also seen an interview with Jared Isaacman. He's now the new NASA administrator. And they've decided to make some major changes, which ironically is what we've talked about here on the net. I remember years ago discussing the possible things that they should be doing for the Artemis mission. The way the plans were before, a couple of days ago, went something like this. You know, the Artemis 2 mission would successfully go to the moon, back, not land, and the crew would be safely returned to Earth. The Artemis 3 plan was to, you know, a couple of, maybe a year and a half or so from now, the idea was to fly Artemis 3 to the moon, orbit the moon, and then dock with a space launch, with the SpaceX Starship vehicle, this 170-foot tall thing, and that was supposed to go down to the moon, bring the crew 2 down to the moon. Total crew on Orion is 4. So the other two would stay on board Orion. The plan was to land on the moon, bring the two people back up within a couple of few days, and dock with the Orion, and everybody would come home happy. That has now all been changed. Artemis 3, which is what that mission was called, will no land on the moon. In fact, it will not even orbit the moon. It will orbit Earth. It will take the crew of four and go into Earth, low Earth orbit, where it will run a lot of tests. And the two main tests they would like to do is to dock with the two human landing system vehicles. One would be the Starship, 170-foot tall thing I just talked about, but in Earth orbit. They would dock with that and transfer the crew back and forth and see how things go. They need to verify that before they actually try doing this in lunar orbit. But they'd rather stay in Earth orbit and do it. And the other part of this Artemis 3 mission would be included would be not only docking with that, but it would be docking with the other human system vehicle. You know, NASA believes in redundancy. You know, if something's not working right, well, we'll have, you know, part B. And the other vehicle is built by Blue Origin, and that's called the Mark II Blue Moon Lander. Yeah, long-term plan was to have the Blue Moon Lander on Mark orbiting the moon and sitting there waiting for Artemis to show up with, you know, with the Orion spacecraft. They were going to dock with the Blue Moon Lander. Again, two people would go down to the moon and then return, dock again with Orion, and come back and land in the Pacific Ocean. Again, now that has been canceled. Artemis 3 would be, then the crew of four, have them dock with two different vehicles in orbit, you know, and run experiments. Dock with the Starship, make sure everything works okay, docking, transfer of crew, and back and forth. And then after that, continue orbiting Earth, and then dock with a Blue Moon vehicle and do the same thing. Make sure everything else is okay, back and forth. Put a crew into both vehicles, bring them back to Artemis, and that would be the main mission for Artemis 3. Also, another thing they want to check out is the spacesuits themselves in orbit around Earth. You know, rather than get to the moon, put on a spacesuit. Maybe it might be possible with it. This way, they could actually test them. Maybe, you know, maybe they won't do an EVA with it, but they could at least test everything out in microgravity rather than 1/6 gravity on a moon. These spacesuits are going to have to be capable of both microgravity, you know, before they land on the moon, and 1/6 gravity when they actually land on the moon. So that will be a big test for Artemis 3. After all of that is done, I'm sure they're going to run plenty of other tests. But that would be it, the main part, you know, for the new plan. So now, landing on the moon itself, that would come now under Artemis 4 and Artemis 5. They've got big plans now. The idea is to accelerate the amount of flights that actually take off with the Space Launch System. Instead of once every 3 years, they plan on doing, you know, maybe two a year. So these two flights that would be scheduled to land on the moon would be 4 and 5, both taking place in 2028. That's their present plan, or maybe, you know, my guess is probably after that, but that's the present plan. So next year, our first this year, of course. Maybe within a couple of weeks, maybe April, you're going to have Artemis too. Orbit moon, come back, land, stop going to the moon. Then Artemis 3 will be running tests in orbit around Earth. And then after that, you're going to have 4 and 5 actually going to the moon, landing on the moon, using either one or both of these human landing vehicles, either the Starship or this new Blue Moon Mark II that's being constructed by Blue Origin. So they're duplicating the very same system that NASA did with Apollo. Apollo 8 was the one that actually flew around the moon and came back with no landing vehicle. That would be very similar to what they plan on doing within a couple of weeks, similar to the Artemis. Artemis 2, where you would send the crew around the moon and bring them back. And then Apollo 9 just orbited the Earth. They didn't go to the moon. And what they did is they actually docked with the lunar module. A lunar module, of course, the lunar module, that one never made it out of Earth orbit. But they docked with it. They put a crew inside the LEM, and they separated from the command module. Command module, they had, you had three people on board. You had Scott, David Scott. You had Rusty, and then the other fellow was James McDivitt. He was the commander. And that's what Apollo 9 did. They tested everything, make sure all the docking procedure and everything was LEM, including testing out the descent module. They did all of that, all in Earth orbit. This way, when they knew on Apollo 10, they were going to go through an exact sequence of what Apollo 11 did. The only difference with the 10 and 11 was they weren't going to land on the moon. That was all done in lunar orbit. But 9 was all done in Earth orbit, similar to what they plan on doing with Artemis 3 now. Test everything out, all the docking procedures with the two possible landing vehicles, Starship, and Blue Moon Lander by Blue Origin. Any comments? WS2N.
Hi, Paul. It's Brian, KF2CC. I've been listening to everything. Very well done presentation, as normal. I think they were biting off a little too fast. More than they can chew, especially with the second leak with the Artemis, dry run. So I hope they get it right next time. Did they set a new date yet?
And I heard another station in there as well. So a new date for Artemis 2? No, not yet. They're still working on the helium problem inside the vehicle assembly building. They just brought that vehicle back in. So once they square that away, they'll set up two things they have to do. They'll have to set up a time schedule for the vehicle rollout back to Launch Complex 39. And then they're going to have to set a date after that. My guess, I don't know, you listen to the interview with Jared Isaacman, new Nazareth minister, and he's looking possibly at the end of March. But even he hinted at like April. I'm going to go with April 1st, the earliest possible date due to the orbital mechanics is the 1st of April, Brian. Let me just pick up the other station. Stand by, Brian. WS2S.
BB2BXL with a question.
Okay, very good. I got you this time.
It's possible I missed it because I had noise in the room and couldn't hear you clearly. But is there a new timeline here? Because I would think that the idea is to get there before the Chinese in 2028, or I think they say by 2029 or thereabouts. Because we know that the Chinese have to meet their timelines or get sent to a labor camp, so they're going to do it. I don't see how with their one launch a year approach they're going to do that, or has Isaacman completely changed the timeline and gotten some money to do that, or does nobody know this at this point? So go ahead.
Yeah, well, they want to have an average of 2 launches per year now instead of once every 3 years. Now, originally, going back, 8 years or so, a couple of administrations ago, they planned on actually having an SL launch once a year, which I thought, was kind of long to begin with. And they planned on, over time, back 10, 12 years ago, when first started talking about this, of actually having about 40 launches, about 1 a year. And I thought that was too long. I was hoping for like 2 a year. And that's the plan now. The plan now is to do at least 2 a year. And hopefully, now, money wise, yeah, that was brought up with the interview I saw. One guy said, in the old days, 4% of the GNP was going to NASA, gross national product. Well, you can see how old I am. That's what they used to call it, right? So anyway, the 4% of the government money was going to NASA. Now it's, less than 1%, one-tenth of what they used to get is what goes into NASA. So where's all this extra money coming from? And the answer is, well, nowadays you have, this is from Jared now, nowadays you have private companies investing heavily into these rocket programs, and which is true, SpaceX and Blue Origin. And they have a tremendous amount of workforce. Each one has probably over 10,000 people involved in this project working for them, and they're pouring in millions of dollars. Is that equal to the original 4%? I would say no. They really didn't talk about the numbers. What they did when this administration took over, and they submitted the budget, they were at almost $25 billion. Now that's been cut way back. Now I think they're around $20 billion. Rough numbers. They lost like 15-20% previous year. Now, with that money, they need around $4.5 billion to keep the space station going, and they need to have all this other money for further research, rocket development, to keep all the deep space program things going. You know, plus they're involved with you know, atmospheric flights as well. You know, National Atmospheric and Space Administration. So this money has to be spread out quite a bit. I don't think it's, well, it's, in my opinion, there's no way that we're all going to be able to fund, like you said, Frank. You know, without this money. So my guess, the next time, you know, they do this every year, the next time they submit a budget, they'll probably request a whole bunch of money and put the fear of God in them that, you know, that China's going to land there before we do. Which, by the way, I never got that. You know, as far as I know, we landed six crew vehicles, 12 people have wandered around on the moon, you know, 50 years ago. So, but, you know, I mean, in their mind, they have a space race going. People that are working today, you know, all the young people, you know, to them, this is the first, you know, they've never seen somebody live walking around on the moon like I have, and I think you, Frank. Back to you.
Yeah, I was a young child then, but I do remember staying up late to watch it. It was something. The process, and the Blue Origins will pay for all this and do it for all mankind. There's just no business case as for space exploration, which is a quote from, I'm drawing a blank on the name, the guy who runs the planetarium. Oh, Neil deGrasse Tyson, in an interview said, look, there's just no business case for space exploration. So they're not going to do it for that reason. So I think it's very problematic. Two launches a year, if either Congress is willing to pay for it or the administration just ignores Congress and spends the money anyway. I guess it's possible. Anyway, I got to go. I will be leave the connection up, but I might not hear it. Send it free for the moment. WB2BXO.
Okay, thanks for the information, Frank, as always. And have a good night. And Brian, I know you got in there first, but let me go back to you, see if you have anything else. This is WS2N for the Space Time Report.
I just wanted to find out, is Trump a supporter of NASA and the project, or is he really not a supporter of the Space Administration?
I can't answer that. I know he's a supporter of himself, but I've never heard one way or another that he's a big fan of big fan or enemy of the space program. So I can't say for sure. You know, it's really more up to Congress. You know, they're the ones that are responsible for laying the money out for this program. You have, what, I think 10 different facilities around the country. You know, you got one in Florida, you got one in Maryland, you got one in Virginia, a couple of California, Ohio, you know, they're all over the place. And then on top of that, you have all these different contractors that have contracts with NASA all around the country, you know, state of Washington. You know, probably, you know, I'd be surprised if it was every state. Most states, you know, have you know, vested in, interest in the space program here on Long Island. You have companies that, you know, make all these fancy cameras for these the rovers. In the old days, they, you know, we actually built the LEM that landed on the moon. So, you know, everybody's got a space program, which involves congressmen from all these different locations. And nobody wants to change that. You know, you're going to hear from there, from these companies and corporations that are involved with the working on the space program. So my guess is that, you know, things will never be basically as far as they were last time, but, you know, they'll make a comeback again. Routinely, over the years, I always saw an increase to some degree, never a decrease, as far as I know. In fact, you're fine.
Okay, very good. One last question. When do you think that NASA would set up a base on the moon for at least part-time habitation? Or do you think the Chinese might do it first?
Well, this whole Artemis program is designed to be just that, you know. I remember Nelson, you know, the last administrator, going on and on that, you know, we're going to the moon to stay, you know, and that's still the mantra that they're preaching now, even though they've switched administrations. And when they say stay, they're talking about, you know, in the beginning, of course, you know, periods of time, but over time, you know, they would like to eventually set up some kind of a permanent, you know, base. You know, it's going to happen slowly, you know. You're going to have longer and longer time frames when people will be staying on the moon. And, you know, depending, of course, in the future. Like I said, if they keep getting funding, you know, if they land on the moon and the public gets, well, we beat China there, and, you know, like what happened with Russia. Yeah, I could see everything being shut down and never seeing a base in our lifetime. But presently, the plan is to do just that. You know, keep launching mission after mission. That's why another thing which I agree with is trying to launch 2 or 3 missions per year. Like Jared went back to the shuttle mission. We used to do that, you know, every 3 months they'd be launching another mission to Earth orbit. He wants to be able to do that with a space launch system I think a lot of money into that to be able to accelerate that. Another thing they want to do is temporarily, I think, but it seems like permanently when I listen to this guy, is to eliminate the exploration upper stage. Now, what is that? The exploration upper stage is an advancement to what they have now, which has already worked. They tested it with the Artemis 1 mission. The upper stage consists of liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen system for that stage. And it has one engine that's called an RL-10 engine. Hydrogen, liquid oxygen. Produces about 25,000 pounds of thrust. Which is great, you know, for an upper stage to get, you know, plenty of cargo, whatever they need to the moon. They had plans, with, you know, as far as I know now, looks like it's being canceled, but I think, you know, like a lot of things, they might say it's being canceled, but maybe they'll bring it back in the future. But right now, they're temporarily going to be canceling the upstage. Right now, it's called the interim cryo propulsion stage. CICPS. Anyway, that's what they're using today, and it's supposed to be replaced by the EUS, the exploration upper stage. That's the newer version of this upper stage, instead of having the one RL-10 engine sticking out of the back. They'll have four RL-10 engines sticking out of the back of this engine, stage, which will, instead of 25,000 pounds of thrust, you'll have over 100,000 pounds of thrust. And that would be able to bring a tremendous amount of cargo to the moon in the future. I believe they're still going to need that, but right now it looks like that's toast. They just need to mass produce what they have. They don't want any more innovation. You know, a new upper stage, new innovation, more things could go wrong. They're worried about safety and all, which is a good thing. But I think they should keep that on the back burner in the future. Another reason they want to delay it is because they have to change the whole launch tower setup. The interim cryo propulsion stage, which they're using now, the launch tower that they use set for that, they have to change it to make it taller for the new stage, which makes it more complex, more pipes, more everything involved, and they feel that's going to slow things down. And again, it was a new innovation. Every time they do something, they're going to be, you know, worried about safety. Here, if they can mass produce this stuff with what they have now, which already successfully worked on Artemis 1, they plan on going with that. Another thing they didn't talk about in the interview, which bothered me, was the Gateway space station. That's, you know, as far as I know, that's still a go. Put it into the computer, they say it's still a go. That's a permanent space station that would be orbiting the moon, keeping the crew on board for long periods of time. Again, that space station is for two reasons. One, constant communication with Earth and the crew that's on the moon. But also, like a waypoint. In other words, you would send the Orion spacecraft out to the moon. It would eventually dock with the space station. It'd hang out there for a while with maybe an existing crew that's already there. And then at some point they would separate from the space station and go down and land on the moon. I haven't heard what's become of this. They kind of like left that out of the what I heard, unless I missed something, you know, in another interview. But we'll see, and we'll get back to you on what the future Gateway is. Hopefully, I don't want to cancel that. Any other comments, Brian? Back to you.
No, not really. I just want to see that they get these hydrogen leaks under control. Otherwise, it's going to be a real problem.
I heard they did successfully do that. They had, well, Artemis 1 had all kinds of leaks, what in fact, to the DAB, the Vehicle Assembly Building, what in fact, out to Launch Council 39B, tested again, had more problems, hydrogen leaks, and back and forth. Here we are years later, And the same thing, Artemis 2 was out there, and they had the hydrogen leak. But this time, they fixed it, and they showed they fixed it because they did run another wet dress rehearsal. They filled up the whole rocket with fuel, liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen. And at the time that they know that they fixed the fields that they had, and they're good to go. They were ready to go. They would have gone by now. They would have had that crew before on the way to the moon back. But that did not happen because they had another problem in that interim cryogenic propulsion stage. That other stage I keep talking about, they had problems with some of the helium, not the helium, the hydrogen that they need to operate the turbos for the engines. So that's what they're working on now. We'll see what happens. Getting late. I just wanted to comment, two quick comments. The ISS space station is normally, what they've been doing is saying, well, we're going to deorbit this thing in 2030. It looks like they need some kind of an approval, I think, from Congress, or at least one of the committees. They want to extend the lifetime to 2032. They don't want to have a situation where we don't have any Americans orbiting the Earth, while the Chinese do. They have the Tiangong space station presently up there. It looks like that's on its way to extending for a couple more years, which is good. And the other thing I wanted to mention is, remember a while back they had a standby. Yeah, remember not too long ago they had a situation on the space station where one of the astronauts had emergency, they had to bring everybody back in January, early January, to have the doctors on Earth look, check this guy out. And they weren't sure who
that
the
time
astronaut was that was on the space station. They knew it was one of four people because four had to return due to flight rules. You have to whoever goes up in the spacecraft has to come back on that same craft. So even if one guy is coming back, all four had to come back. And once it revealed at the time who it was, if it was Cardin, Qatar, or the Japanese fellow, or the Russian, or maybe it was Mike Fink. Turns out it was Mike Fink. He had the problem. By the way, he's a ham. KE5AIT. Whatever it was, they figured out once they had him back. And make sure he's okay. They just haven't released the information on what the problem was. Blood clot or, kidney stone or something. Who knows? He's been up, I think, at least four different times. So he's very experienced. They were going to do a spacewalk. Dina, she was ready to go, and so was him, but something came up, and they decided to bring them back early. Anyway, I'm looking at the time, so if anybody has any last comments, go ahead. Otherwise, I'm going to send it back to Roy. This is WS2N.
No, Paul, I'm good. Thank you very much for the great presentation. And Roy, thank you for everything, as usual. And I look forward to hopefully next week. So this is KF2ZZ, wishing you both a very good night. I'll be on the side.
Very good. Yeah. I'll take it back next week. It's just like a continuing story from week to week. until we get to the moon, I guess. And then we'll be looking for a QSL card, Brian. You know. Hopefully somebody sends CW up there. That would be really different. Anyway, thank you for participating. And Frank and everybody else that listened. And for now, we'll turn it back to Roy. And I know